webcasting to the world live the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's hump day. It's Wednesday, December 9th, 2009. The only 12-09-09 in the history of the world. Let us take it in together on this Wednesday night, the midweek edition of GKO. Thank you for joining us around the globe. Whether you are live or on the archive, we're happy to have you with us. And if you are live, we are cordially now inviting you to join us. So we want to have your participation. We request your participation at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260 is the Glenn Klein Online toll-free hotline. 1-800-436-3260. Call early and often. Sean O'Halloran, our engineer and producer and call screener extraordinaire, is waiting to hear from you. And now we are waiting to hear from the president, the founder, the most high holy reverend of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams. Michael!
Good evening, Glenn.
Good evening.
How is Tampa?
Good evening. What show was that from? Good evening. That was Albert Hitchcock.
No.
Yes, he used to go, good evening.
No. His was more like, good evening.
No, that was Bela Lugosi. Sounded like that. We are really dating ourselves, Michael.
Well, nobody else will date me, so I guess I have to.
Yeah, we cover a broad cross-section of humanity here on the Gospel Revolution webcast. And we want your participation tonight. You know, Michael, there's something about when people get on the phone with us and participate on any level. It adds so much to the show. And we always encourage people, but statistically, in radio, they say that one person will call for every 100,000 listeners. So we know we have
every one that we don't have call, that's 100,000 less listeners, eh?
Well, I don't know if that's the case, but it might be. But if you're thinking about it, I know some folks feel like either they don't want to call, or they may feel silly, or they may be nervous, or other people think, well, I've been on there too much. But neither is valid as far as we're concerned. Because
I'm on
all
here
we
every
want
week.
Is people to pick up the phone and let us hear what's on their heart.
Yeah, I'm on here every week. Everybody else should be on every week also.
Yes. We made that point to our good friend Tressa Martin a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
In Spokane, Washington. And she was like, hey, I never thought of that. Because she had called a couple weeks, and then she came to the convention, and then she called. But whether your name is Tressa Martin or not, we want to hear from you tonight. 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260. If you're listening on the archives, you can email us at any time at webcast@gospelrevolution.com, webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Well, during our pre-show prep, Michael, we were talking about this global warming conference in Copenhagen that is going on, and the hysteria. Now, folks, remember, we're separating politics from all of our comments. Obviously, Michael and I have political views, but the thing that we do on this radio program is that we endeavor to approach things from a gospel perspective. And we were talking about the whole hysteria regarding global warming and climate change from the perspective of how religion or how religious it sounds to us, and how common or how consistent with the end times hysteria that you hear in the evangelical Christian community, we're now hearing from the global warming community, if you will, and with its leader, Al Gore. And you saw him, I didn't see it on CNN, with John Roberts today. But why don't you convey to the beautiful human some of what you heard and some of what was disconcerting, not from, again, a political standpoint, but just from a logical or a hysteria or end times perspective, if you will.
Well, it was very interesting to listen to the interview. One of the things that I found interesting is that it does take on a political slant now, it seems, as far as never really addressing a question, never really responding. You know, you just keep your point and don't listen to the other side. And that is a lot of what I heard during the interview. But, you know, it kind of broke down to, as far as for the end time doctrine discussion, finally, you know, the question of the true facts behind global warming. With this leak of these emails, that there is a real concern that somebody's going to have to go back and validate the records that have been commonly accepted as fact now, which you get ridiculed if you even have an opinion of any kind that does not agree with it, which that to me, you know, is what it smacks of religion so totally. Is that, you know, people can become very religious in their politics to where that you can't even say anything without them getting furious about their politics. You can't hear another opposing view. And, but with this, the former vice president, Al Gore, he came to the point where that he just said, well, he said, you don't even have to go back and look at the old facts that have already been accepted. Look at what's going on around us. And there was just this mild hysteria in his voice. That
and what did he say was going on around us?
Hello?
What did he say was going around us?
Oh, he said there's fires. And there's droughts, and there's floods, and it just sounded like somebody quoting out of Matthew chapter 24, you know, and which Jesus went through that list, and contrary to Christian opinion, he was not saying what it was going to be like in the last days. He was saying these things have always happened, and they always will. Jesus went through that list and said, you know, now if you really want to know what is an end of a sign that the end of the world or the end of the age is, here it is. And of course, we've taught on that extensively, and we know that was manifested.
Michael, I think it's important to pause here and say when Jesus listed the type of things that Al Gore listed today, he was definitive in saying these are not the signs of the end times.
Absolutely. That's exactly what he was saying. These are not these signs. And was trying to hold people's attention long enough to get to the real sign, which he revealed that sign. And that sign was manifested over 2,000 years ago. And also, of course, was the end of the world as far as Judaism was concerned, ended also 2,000 years ago. But there just seems to be such a, you know, it sounds so religious to me anymore because you can't, and their response is what gets me. Number one, you have to be condescending to the opposing view.
Right.
One of the terms that I found today when I was listening to Al Gore was that he said all of the anti-climate people are behind this. And I thought, anti-climate? Anti-climate? what is an anti-climate person?
It's an anti-Christ person, but in the global warming argument.
Yeah, you know, I'm anti cold weather person, but I'm not anti climate. I kind of think climate's a good thing. So, but anything to make it sound, you know, condescending instead of just standing with your facts. You know, I tell you what, Glenn, especially in going through this here, supposedly all this scientific fact backs up global warming, but they can't suffer a single question. They can't suffer a single question. And why, if all of this is fact, why is this email embarrassing at all?
Email. It was a series of emails.
Oh, it was over 1,000 emails. Now, how many of them had these comments in them, I don't know. But and then the persistence. You know, John Roberts was interviewing him, and so one of Brother Al's responses was that, you know, these were comments taking out of context from an email 10 years ago, and Roberts corrected him and said there was some from 10 years ago, but many of them were very recent. But, and he, of course, his response was, and then maintained, even though he was corrected about it being many years ago only, he maintained his comment. He wouldn't, even though he did not defend his position, he maintained his rhetoric. And that, to me, is religious. That, to me, is religion. And it is also political. I mean, the politics has turned religious. You've got to maintain your position and make sure that everybody agrees with you, and it's not an issue of two people coming together and finding a way, but you just must maintain your position and make sure that the other people know that they are just, you know, they're not worth living, you know.
They're not even worth considering. I wish on a very high level that there were journalists that were as well versed in questioning politicians as John Roberts did with Al Gore today as they would be in questioning religious leaders.
Yeah, boy,
when they're on
sure.
programs like the Larry King Show, for example, who's had, you know, every religious leader from Billy Graham, Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, you know, Joel Osteen on down. In having knowledge, what we need is some people who understand the gospel to be questioning these people with some knowledge, and that would be very beneficial. But I'm reminded, you know, there is such a heavy religious component to this. I saw today, I didn't see the John Roberts interview, but I did see a video that they showed the attendees at the climate conference in Copenhagen, a video they showed at the start of the conference, which had a little girl on the verge of literally being swept up by a storm that was purportedly caused by global warming and climate change. And literally, I mean, her life was, she was literally at the end of it, was hanging by a tree limb. So desperate, and it was all children on this video. And Michael, this video could have easily been produced by Rodney Howard Brown or by Pat Robertson
yeah, sure.
or by somebody of that, Perry Stone or Jack Van Impe or Hal Lindsey or somebody of that ilk. And it's all fear-mongering about the future.
Yeah. And the thing of it is, if the science is on your side, you don't need the fear-mongering. You don't need it. And you know, that's the drug that I came off of in embracing the gospel, is that I don't have any desire or need to make anybody afraid. And, you know, when I compare other things with the gospel, when I'm looking for the truth in a situation, I really do want to see that it is transparent. I want to see that someone does not have to totally dismiss someone else's views to be able to embrace them. and that you don't have to you don't have to insult an entire group of people because of the comments of one person. I mean, that really is a bigotry. Now, I may come right out and tell you you're just crazy, you know, but that doesn't mean that everybody that thinks like you do is crazy. But the broad generalizations of entire groups, you know, that everybody's like this, and everybody that thinks this, they're all like that, and everybody thinks this, they're all like that. And the fact of it is, there's a lot of really legalistic people that do not fit a lot of the criteria of legalism, because legalism is something that's of the heart, and beliefs are of the heart. But when I compare the gospel, well, let's just take the global warming issue. I cannot imagine that any of my emails going to anyone on the subject of the gospel being hacked into, and me having to be upset that they found something that I didn't want anyone to know about the gospel.
Right.
Comments that I had made about the gospel, or now there might be personal things that I think, you really had no right to do that. But these are not personal emails. These are people who are experts in this field. And the top experts are saying these things. Now, I know that the whole defense of this is just dismiss it. We know those old facts. You know, one of the things that we do all the time pertaining to the gospel is go back and cover the old facts all of the time. The things that I think, wow, we covered that. It seems like 100 years ago. We all know that. Well, that's just never true. And, if they're wanting people to catch up with their subject, they have to go over the old facts. You have to go over it all the time. I do. I have to reteach the same things over and over and over again because of the new people. I don't expect those people just to say, well, we just accept this, this, and this. So just don't even try to go through a learning experience and get over the learning curve here at all. Just don't even ask those questions, because we know these things are already facts. No, every individual has to learn those facts. And they're dismissing something that's very important. If global warming and its facts, as is called, are true, they should want to restate these facts over and over and over again, and to explain why in detail. You've got a whole world that you're wanting to convince of this, and yet there's facts. We already know this, and that's what everybody always says. Anytime you confront somebody, whether in religion and now with global warming, it is, well, we already know this, 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 and this. Tell me how we know that. What is the science that says that? And the fact of it is, I can't find anybody that can produce those things. There's some opinions. There's opinions from all sides.
Exactly. And, of course, as you said, so dismissive as a religious mindset would have of any contrary viewpoint. No matter how much sense or how much validity to that viewpoint. But the leader of the global warming movement, or the anti-global warming, now they've changed it, of course, because it appears that in the last 10 years the Earth has actually been cooling. So now
they do not acknowledge
climate
that.
Change.
You will not hear that it has been cooling over the last 10 years from from Al Gore. He doesn't say that.
There's a reason that they've now dubbed it climate change versus global warming.
Yes, they have changed that.
Let's, for the sake of discussion, say that Al Gore is the leader of this movement worldwide. He was given the Nobel Peace Prize. He received an Academy Award. He's made and is making millions of dollars on new so-called green energy. I think we need to remember Al Gore's upbringing and his origins. Al Gore is a Southern Baptist. And
Tennessee,
so the whole
Southern
concept
Baptist.
That we're living in the end times, that this thing is about to wrap up, and the fear-mongering that Al Gore must have been exposed to as a young person and even as an adult has got to be influencing his perspective now as he's tapped into this other very valuable and lucrative perspective for himself. And whether it has or it's not, he certainly is acting like it is, and that they're certainly behaving as such.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And, you know, there's a lot of very valid comparisons that are out there. And one of them is the whole fear thing that religion, it works. It works. Religion has proved it time and time again. But here is my assessment of all of this, because I think that global warming is becoming a religion. And that's the first time I've ever said that directly, but I really do believe that it is becoming a religion. Now, we'll wait and see exactly how that plays out, but I think it's more based on a belief than it is based on science. And with that being the case, I mean, here we have the an entire belief system. But you know, when I think back, when the religious when the Republican Party reached out and lassoed the religious right, it brought them lots of success in the short term, but it also has brought them to their knees in the long run. And we've not seen the end of this story play out as to the involvement of evangelical Christianity in the Republican Party. And the thing that I am seeing, the comparison that I'm seeing, is that the Democrats have so latched on to the religion of global warming, if it truly is a religion, which is the view that I'm looking at right now, that the very same way, now that that they have latched into global warming, the religion of global warming, it could become as big of a noose around the neck of the Democratic Party as evangelical Christianity is to the Republican Party.
Well, you might be right, but I don't see it as being quite the same, and for obvious reasons. I mean, there's a fervency and a dogmatism that has embraced or has been embraced by the global warming community, but they got a long way to go to catch up to evangelicals. I mean, one of the hardest things, I mean, and this is a very difficult thing. You know, you hear in this country people talking about the health care legislation that's making its way through Congress right now. And they're saying, hold on, stop, let's redo it. Well, that would cause, out of necessity, an entire very intelligent group of people, very powerful group of people, to say, whoa, we were wrong. And in the same way, in the global warming activists, for them to stop and check themselves and to say, we were wrong, it's the same thing that we in the Gospel Revolution have faced, especially those of us who have been in positions of leadership along the way during our religious experience. For us to say, one of the most difficult things for us to say, Michael, initially was, I was wrong. And the ironic thing is that eventually, that phrase, I was wrong, becomes a very, very powerful thing in one's life. But for the, whether it be the religious community, the evangelical community, the global warming community, for somebody who is so invested in a certain dogma, in a certain position, in a certain doctrine, to say, and especially those of us who shared it so fervently and so heartfelt, to say I was wrong is a very, very difficult thing to do.
Well, it most certainly is. And until the day that you can say I was wrong, you will never find out what you don't know. What you don't know is on the other side of I was wrong. And if you never say I was wrong, you have brought your education on any subject to a certain level, and the rest of the knowledge that is there waiting for you to find is completely sealed out. You reject truth on an emotional level, not on an intellectual level, because now being right has become the force that's guiding you. And when you start rejecting truth on an emotional level, that's a religion. That's what religion does. It rejects truth on an emotional level and has nothing to do with thinking, or has nothing to do with thought or reason at all. And but it is. It's a powerful thing on so many levels to stop and say I was wrong. And I have to say that the first time that I said I was wrong, which has been well over 2 decades ago now, after the first time that I said that, I can tell you, without a doubt, for me, my experience was the things that I did not know, I began to learn, not just pertaining to the subject on which I said I was wrong, but many doors began to open up of understanding that I had no clue was connected to that subject that I finally had to admit that I was wrong about. And that's true, Glenn, on every level of education. And finding out you're wrong is the path of learning. That is the path of learning. Even when you're in school, it's not necessarily when you find out you're right on how to do fractions. It's when you do it wrong that the door is open for you to learn. And then being able to look at the paper and it's got a red X on it, that's when your learning is opened, is when there's a red X there. You're wrong. You have to admit you're wrong. And you can stand and argue with the teacher all day long, but that's where your learning stops if you don't accept the red X. You have to accept it, that you're wrong. So, and it's just like in this situation, you know, I don't understand why that they can't just come right out and say, you know, well, obviously there is something wrong. We don't know why, but we do know that the head of the whole operation that these emails came from resigned. We know that he's evidently unwilling to stand behind this or explain. It doesn't have a simple explanation to it, or it wouldn't be having people resigning their very coveted positions. But you know, why not just say, you know, obviously there's something wrong here? Why is that so unacceptable?
Because unacceptable, you lose credibility with not only your base, whoever was supporting you, but even amongst the people that you're trying to convince of your position previously. I'm reminded of a news conference that President George W. Bush gave one time, and they asked him what he regretted or what some of the mistakes he made in his first term as president was, and he would not give anything. He right. could not think of one thing that even something that could be self ingratiating to say, because he knew, whether it be from his political or religious upbringing, which both are very similar, that as soon as you admit fault on anything with a certain segment of your audience, you're going to lose credibility, which I'm sure that you found to be true.
Oh, yeah, and not only do you lose credibility, but you open the door for questions. And that's what they're trying to stave off. But here's the thing. If it's science, why are we trying to stave off questions? That's you know, I think it's I don't like politics being the animal that it is, but it is true. If you ever say you were wrong, you are as sure as washed up as you possibly can be. But this should not be politics. This should not be a religion. This should be science. So why are there so many manifestations of politics and religion in it? Why does there have to be that? You know,
because you've got political and religious mindsets involved.
It absolutely is.
And there's no doubt that there is an element of control in this thing. I mean, there are literally billions of dollars at stake in this discussion. And whenever there's money and control, human beings respond in a certain way. Yeah. And in a certain way that they respond is not with openness and with graciousness. I mean, that is not a natural human response when there is an issue where there's so much control and so much money at stake.
Well, you know, if let me say this. If global warming is a man-made thing, from what they're saying, that this is man-made. If it's true, see, here's the sad thing about it. If it's true, we need to know that. But now, what has been being taken on now is a political stance and a religious stance. And I would really like to know what science says. Now, regardless of what anybody says, all scientists do not agree on anything. And to dismiss a person who is qualified to speak into that particular science, if they're qualified, they should be heard. And they should be heard, and they should be heard, and they should be heard. You know, the thing that has clarified the gospel for me is continually hearing the other side all the time.
Right.
And being subject to their questions.
Right.
It has not made my stance on the gospel less. It has made it stronger. It has made my belief in Jesus stronger. By entertaining these questions and never ever closing the door to criticism or anything else. The door is always open for any of these things, for any question whatsoever. But
well,
that's
the
thing
that
gives
clarity.
Well, the
door is open to you,
ladies
and gentlemen. We want to hear from you. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's Webcast Wednesday, the Gospel Revolution Webcast. We've got Michael Williams in Houston, Texas, yours truly. And Sean O'Halloran in the Tampa Bay studio of Glenn Klein Online at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260 is our toll-free number. We want to hear from you. We're a little over halfway through already, and we're happy to go over. It's amazing how long sometimes it takes us to get our first caller online, but we want to hear from you tonight at 1-800-436-3260. Well, Mikey, getting off subject, but not really. I'm watching Perry Stone. Do you know Perry Stone?
Not personally, but I've had the pleasure of hearing him speak many times on TV.
Perry Stone is a guy that is on TV a lot, and he teaches a lot on so-called end-time prophecies on Israel. And he was doing a pledge drive, a fundraiser, on one of the Christian television networks. And I'll watch this for a while. And he said, as he was before this church, I believe it actually was in Texas, down by you, and he said, I've got a revelation for you. He said, don't miss it. And he said, what I'm going to say to you right now might shock you, but I'm going to say this. It's a revelation from God, and you need to get this. He said, your financial giving, your financial offering to the Lord is the same to God as was the Old Testament sacrifices of the animals, the animal sacrifices in the Old Testament. That's how powerful it is. It's equal, he said, with the sacrifices in the temple of the animals before God on the altar of God. And I thought, finally, something Perry Stone said that I can agree with.
It is.
But he was saying it, of course, to encourage people to break open their checkbooks and cut a hefty check to this Christian television network.
Well, and what he didn't follow through is the same thought, you know, that giving offerings to God is on the same level as offering an animal sacrifice. So unless he's willing to offer an animal sacrifice right after the giving of the offering to the Lord, he needs to stop it. But what he did is disqualify. Unless we see some Christian church, I mean, even in the month of horribly legalistic Christianity, at least they're not in there sacrificing animals. And he put, because they know, even though they don't know the fullness of the difference between the blood of a goat and the blood of Christ, they do know that the blood of a goat is no longer necessary. Because the blood of Jesus. So when Perry Stone put that on that level, why didn't those people stop and think, Glenn? Why could they not think that this, he's right? And since we don't offer animal sacrifices to the Lord, we shouldn't offer money to the Lord anymore. It's an excellent teaching tool. I'm going to have to use it myself.
No, it's incredible. I mean, it was absolutely remarkable to hear a evangelical leader stand up and directly equate people's modern-day financial giving to the Old Testament's blood sacrifice. I mean, and he did it with a straight face, and I'm sure people cut checks by the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands.
Oh, sure they did.
Of dollars, who knows?
Yep, it's pretty wild. But you know what? I'm really glad that he made the statement, because maybe someone who is still thinking may actually think about this whole issue and realize, my gosh, his equality, the equality here, and we've covered this issue, even to the statement of people saying, well, the Lord, let the Lord support your ministry. Well, the Lord don't support ministries. People do. It's not the Lord supporting Benny Hinn's ministry. It's people. It has nothing to do with the Lord.
Yeah, but that's not what they say.
It's not what they say, and it's not the Lord who is providing for the finances of Mike Williams Ministries either. It's people. The only difference is I say it. I let people know this is not the Lord doing this. This is because you've been set free, you have the power to choose. And you can choose to do it or not to do it. It is not God providing for the ministry. Because it is, then we have to accept that all of the funding for Al-Qaeda, all of the funding for the Catholic Church, and all of the funding for the going into the that's and has funded and supported the priest and their homes and all of the regalia that goes with it, that God Himself has supported pedophilia, and all of the other atrocities committed by ministries. And it just isn't true. It just isn't true. Now, it's something that we don't like. We like to think that what we're doing is God telling us to do it. But I really do encourage people to please, you know, whenever you're deciding what to give to this ministry, we ask you to please stop and check your spiritual thinking at the door and just decide what you want to do. It is really a very powerful experience. It's very empowering to know that you didn't have to have God to speak to you to do what you're doing. You decided to do what you're doing because that you are a complete free agent on this earth through the power of the blood of Jesus Christ, and you can decide to support or not to support. And it's not going to change anything with God. It's not a manifestation.
We're going to talk about somebody's decision to support this effort, apparently out of their own free agency, if you will, towards the end of this webcast. But we've got our dear sister, Helen Gannett, online from St. Alberta, Alberta, Canada. Helen!
Hello.
How are you?
I am fine. I'm calling you from St. Albert, Alberta.
Yes,
it's absolutely freezing cold out here.
We're so appreciative that you did.
Oh, I bet it is, Helen. I'm coming to Alberta on the 29th of January. I'm going to be in Calgary. Will you be anywhere around there?
It's not going to be very nice weather.
Oh, I know. It's gotten really cold really early this year, hasn't it?
It really has, but there's worse things in the world than being cold, I guess.
Isn't there, yes.
Yeah,
but Helen,
yeah. Michael has a very specific strategy with how to deal with the cold in Calgary.
But does he pretend it's not there?
No.
Almost.
There's no pretending. There's a very specific and conscious strategy, deliberate, that Michael has already decided upon. Why don't you share with the beautiful humans what your strategy is with dealing with the cold in Calgary when you arrive on the 29th of January?
Well, of course, Helen, our meetings there are conducted at the Carriage House Inn.
Right.
Which is a beautiful hotel. And they have the best restaurant that I know of in the area there.
Oh,
and
good.
For breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and late-night snacks also that you can order room service up to midnight. So my plan is that the only time I'm going to feel Alberta air is when I walk out the front door of the airport to grab a taxi, and when I walk from the taxi into the into the hotel, and then when I reverse that 3 days later, and that's the only time I'm going to be outside.
Anybody wants
to go eat, it's going to be downstairs at the restaurant.
I don't blame you. That's a wise move to make. It's freezing.
I think it is.
Did you get a lot of snow already?
I don't know. I can't measure it, but it's just really cold. We've had snow I don't live in Calgary. I live about 3 hours north, so it's even colder.
Oh yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. But I wanted to tell you, it's just a small thing. I absolutely love your tapes. Whenever we go camping, that's our best entertainment. We take it with us. I'm not sure entertainment's the right word, but that's what we listen to.
We're heading
out to Houston next week for about a week in Texas to spend Christmas out there, and we're taking them with us wherever we go.
You're coming
just
to Houston?
I wanted you to know that.
You're coming to Houston?
We are. We're going to be the 18th, sorry, and we're going to go hit on one of the bars because there's Billy Joe Shaver in town that we're going to go here, and then we're going to leave from then and just travel a bit and end up back in Dallas.
Well, my goodness. Well, call me when you get here. I should meet you guys somewhere for a bite to eat or something.
Oh, I'd love that.
Oh, I would, too. That would be so awesome.
Where in Houston are you?
Excuse me?
Are you in the city of Houston?
I am still in the city of Houston, yes, but I'm on the northwest side.
We're going to be by the airport, wherever that is.
By the Bush International?
Yeah, that one.
Oh, yeah, you're 20 minutes from me.
Well, let's do that. That sounds wonderful.
Oh, let's do. Absolutely. Well,
maybe after the call, give me your number or whatever.
Oh, no, we'll give it to you right now. Oh,
okay, perfect.
Yeah. You got something to write with?
Phone number.
I do.
Yeah, and this is my home phone number. It's 281-955-9500. 1910.
Perfect. Did you say 281-955-1910?
That's exactly right. And if you should
lose
it...
That is wonderful.
It's on the website if you should lose it.
Well, maybe we'll meet for breakfast on the 19th or so.
Please do.
Before we head out of
Houston. Yes.
I'll give you a call.
We could even meet at the Marriott where we held our convention. The folks there would love to have us.
Sounds perfect. Is that close to the airport?
It is close to the airport. They have a shuttle service, in fact.
Well, we'll have a car.
Oh, you'll have a car? Great.
Yeah,
yeah, it's 10 minutes from the airport at the Marriott. Or we can find someplace else.
We'll figure it out.
We will.
That would be wonderful. I would love that.
Oh, I can't wait.
Good deal. I'm glad you offered that invitation. That's excellent.
Oh, absolutely. Anybody that's coming through Houston, you can't come here without seeing me.
Ah, well, I'd love that. I haven't seen you for a couple of years because you usually used to come to Edmonton, but you don't much anymore.
No, and that's where I saw you last, was in Edmonton. Eh?
Absolutely. Yes, you did. Yeah. At Rowan's house.
Oh, yes.
I think that's where you were last time you came.
Yeah, we actually did hold our last meeting there, actually,
yeah,
in the house.
That's right. I was there. I remember.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was a wonderful time. I remember.
It was a great time.
I remember those.
Well, that sounds nice.
That,
we'll make that happen.
Isn't that where I recorded the new the new series on the Book of Galatians?
You know, I think you're right. I think that is what it was.
I think that was the last meeting I did in Edmonton, was the new Book of Galatians.
There was quite a few of us that go to that all the time. Dan Canole is one of them. If you remember him, he always does, he's an ex-preacher.
Yeah.
And there was quite a few people there, I'm sure, that we both know.
Well, yeah, you guys get together and we'll talk when you get here. Let's put together a meeting in Edmonton.
That would be wonderful. Though I don't mind driving to Calgary, but Edmonton is nicer.
Oh, there's a lot of people in Edmonton I haven't seen in a while.
I know,
and
we all talk about
it.
There's a big group of us that left the organized churches that once we heard all about you, and we kind of meet for breakfast every Sunday. There's about 15, 20 of us, so your name comes up quite often.
Well, Michael up to Edmonton, for God's sake.
Well, maybe he should, huh? We'll talk about
it. We do it. Maybe not in the cold weather,
20 people is a large group for me.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people here that still remember you very, very, very fondly. And I'm sure if I told you some names, you'd remember them.
If we advertise, I'm sure that we'd pull in some folks that maybe don't even come to the little breakfast anymore.
Probably, you're right.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for calling.
Well, sure, I will give you a call, but I just want to tell you how much your tapes always go with us wherever we go, camping or any kind of a road trip.
Sweet.
The only thing we take with us is those tapes.
Well, Helen, you've got to get a hold of, and they're going to be available very soon, about Michael's teachings on the Book of Hebrews that he did at the convention in Houston last month.
Yes, I'm planning on ordering that.
Yeah, that'll be available on the website soon.
Perfect. We'll probably order that one.
Thank you, Helen.
Well, I don't want to use up too much more of your time. Someone else might be calling, but I just want you to know how much we enjoy that on our road trips.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you so much. It's so
encouraging. And I'll give you a call in the next week or so.
Please do.
Absolutely. And I'll send you some information with our schedule and stuff like that. I'll send it via email.
That's awesome.
Perfect.
All right, Helen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Here's Helen Gannett, ladies and gentlemen, from St. Albert. Alberta.
Speaking of global warming.
No global warming in Wisconsin tonight. They got 18 inches of snow in the last 2 days.
Wow.
We're reporting from the beautiful humans in the frozen north. Speaking of people that enjoy the CDs, we've got a nice email from Carrie McDaniel. He says, or she says, I don't know, Carrie. Do you know Carrie McDaniel? Do you remember that name?
The name sounds familiar.
It's a heat. I love you guys. Can't wait till I get a hold of the new DVD series of your recent conference. And he says, your brother from another mother, as Glenn would say.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Thanks for that note. Very much appreciated. Much appreciated hearing from Helen. And now that line is available for you, beautiful humans, with about 10 minutes to go on this particular edition of Glenn Klein Online. 1-800-436-3260. Let us hear from you. We'll even go extra time if you people will pick up the phone and call us, if you're listening live right now, and it's about 10 minutes until 10 o'clock on the east coast of the United States of America, that line's available for you, 1-800-436-3260. This email, Michael, is from Tim Knappenberger, our good brother Tim. He says, "Hi, Glenn and Mike. Mike, thanks for the Twinkling of an Eye series, especially CD number 5 and its message of how Christ in us can resurrect any loss, defeat, and quote-unquote death experienced in this walk through the power of his indwelling spirit. Its teaching really blessed me. I'm working my way through the rest of the series. Here's a question. Every Sunday morning, the quote-unquote three heretics, Tom, Tim, and Rick, meet for breakfast and always carve out time to discuss some of Mike's recently listened to teachings. One recurrent theme we ponder is this. The true gospel, complete freedom in Christ, is wonderful to our ears, hearts, and spirits. However, the message seems to not be drawing the masses. The three of us have learned in life that when the crowd is all running in mass in one direction, that is generally a sure sign to turn away and run the opposite direction. Mike, as much as many of us have come to embrace and love the true gospel, do you feel that this gospel remains a minority message to the world at large? God seems to historically work with quote-unquote remnants, small seed-based groups of people. Are we gospel revolutionaries to remain a small remnant meeting in breakfast nooks, coffee houses, and closets for the foreseeable future? Should we embrace our quote-unquote solitary status, as lonely as it gets at times? Hey, at least we're not running off the proverbial religious cliff with the rest of the religious and evangelical lemmings. Peace, brothers," he says, and that's Tim Knappenberger. Awesome email, Tim. Thanks very much. Are we destined, Michael, just to be, just in the vast minority?
You know what, Glenn, this is the way that I live my life, and I hope that others would take some encouragement from this. I live my life as though if I'm the only person on the earth that believes this gospel, I'm okay. If I got one buddy to share it with, I am absolutely flying. And if there's more than that that believe at all, that's just, for me, I mean, you've got to look at my experience, first off, in this gospel. And I could thread back through the every step of the way and seeing the shock, the fright, the surprise, the delight, every emotion you could think of coming across people's faces from hearing words they had never ever heard before in church, and a lot of situations would never hear in church except under a curse. But I understand where Tim is coming from, and please treasure the fact that you've got somebody else to sit down with. Believe me, it has not always been that way, even to have even one other person to sit down and fellowship with over the gospel. I never will forget standing up just preaching the gospel of peace the first time. You've got to realize I had no one to reflect with on this subject. I had no book to read. There was no teaching in any Christian bookstore on the gospel of peace. There wasn't any. And the gospel of peace, of course, for me, in my process of learning, is the very foundation of this entire gospel and does remain so to this very day. It's certainly not a fact we tucked away and now we know all of that. Let's move on. All of this information is relevant today and fresh and now. But I tell you what, while I understand where Tim is coming from and the wanting to know, is this going to be something that, you know, that we sit here, you know, with us few? First off, be happy there is a few, because man, I cannot tell you about the lonely days of standing up and being the only one. The only one. Do you hear me? The only one. and facing an entire religious community that never had heard such words in their entire lives. But I tell you what else I live with every day. It is really strange because one of the first things I do in the morning is turn on the news. There is always this thing almost in my subconscious thinking, but still close enough to the surface to where that I am sometimes actually aware of it, that I think I could possibly turn the TV on this morning. And just like we found out that Tiger Woods hit a tree and several women fell out, that all of
several
a sudden,
women did not fall off the tree or out of the car. But we know what you mean.
No, they fell out of the tree.
it was more than several, but nonetheless.
Yes. So Tiger Woods turned on the TV one morning, and Tiger's Cadillac hits a tree and several women fall out of the tree. So then, you know, it's like, wow, that's something I never knew, and now it's flooded the whole earth, the entire earth. And then suddenly I click on and there's an email. And suddenly, for the first time, on an open debate level, there's a question about global warming.
Right.
And I could go through this. Everybody knows how that happens. But, Glenn, do you know that I live with that hope inside me that one day I'm going to get up and totally unbeknownst to me, and not because of some meeting I had, but I'm going to click on the TV, and whether it comes from me or somebody else is saying or somebody that Oprah's got on her TV show or suddenly something that has hit the news, that this gospel will be brought to the forefront of this planet, I live with that hope every day in my heart. But you see, both of those elements keep me going. My conversations, even, you guys may think it's really stupid that me and Glenn Klein spend probably as much, if not more, time on the phone when we, almost on a daily basis, more time just talking, other than being online with you guys right now, we're on the phone talking. And it's always gospel related.
Yep.
It's not religious at all. Believe me, you would not believe how non-religious our conversations are.
Well, we've often said that our conversations, if offline, would be more listened to than online, but
yeah,
that's for another day.
Absolutely.
But right now, there are, Tim, a lot more people out there than you think. I mean, you got your three at your coffee clutch, which is awesome. And I'll bet when Helen goes to see Billy, and by the way, Helen, if you're still listening, the fact that you're going to see Billy Joe Schaefer is just awesome. I mean, I bet there's a lot of people in the Billy Joe Schaefer audience that also believe the gospel, at the very least, if it was explained to them.
Yes.
But a gentleman that we know is also in agreement from the great state of Ohio is online with us right now, Mr. Tom Tomsky. Haven't heard from him in a few weeks. Tom!
Hello.
Hey, Tom.
Hello.
How goes it?
Good, good.
How's the letter delivering in the chilly Midwest?
It's not bad. Today we were blessed with... we started out with sunshine, and then we had some hail, then we had about a 40-mile-an-hour wind, then we had some thunder, then it started snowing and raining while the sun was out, and now it's just kind of blowing about 40 miles an hour. Nice day.
You went through the entire Mailman's Creed today.
That's Ohio, but the one good thing about it is...
you went through the Mailman's Creed and also the End Time Doctrine Creed of the weather in one lump sum.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. That's what I was worrying about. I thought maybe when I used to walk, I don't walk anymore, so the weather doesn't bother me as much.
Oh, that's right.
But when I used to walk, the one thing I used to get a kick out of was walking in a real heavy lightning and thunderstorm.
Wow.
You know, and I always used to think, like, I thought it would be really cool for a way to go would be to get hit by lightning, and all that would be left would be my uniform and my shoes smoking.
Well, when the rapture happens, there's going to be a lot of undelivered mail.
Right, right. I was listening to your thing about that. Who was that guy? About the tithes and offerings and all that.
Perry Stone?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I never heard of him before.
That's
but anyhow,
good.
I did something really weird the last, about the last month and a half. Wasn't too weird, but I don't, like I said, I drive on my mail route. So I downloaded on my MP3 player, like, all the Gospels and the New Testament letters, right? And I just listened to them all for about 4 to 6 hours a day, nonstop,
wow,
while I was working. And I got to come to a conclusion. It's no wonder people are nuts. I'm not kidding you.
Absolutely.
Right? Two of the Gospels tell you that the thieves joined in with the crowd in cursing Jesus.
Yeah.
And then Luke tells you that the one thief did his thing that you always hear the story about. Nobody ever tells you about the two Gospels where the two thieves just join in right with them.
Right.
And there is no good thief. Okay?
Yeah.
But one of my favorite parts is when the apostles, after Jesus raises from the dead, and he tells, and Mary sees him, and they go tell the apostles, and they don't believe her, right? So they're up in the room, he comes and visits them, and it says the first thing he does is berate them for their unbelief, right?
Yeah.
And then he turns right around and tells them afterwards that you go out and preach this gospel, and anybody that doesn't believe you goes to hell. You know
yep.
what I'm saying? It's just
yep.
confusing is what I'm saying. And I don't mean confusing, but what I mean is reading the gospel the way we've all read the gospels, and we're taught to read the Gospels and the Bible over the years, is enough to make you nuts.
And it
How's
did.
That?
And
huh?
it did.
And it did. You're exactly right. It's enough to make a person crazy.
Yeah.
Because it's just, and the one thing that I did come to another conclusion was, you'd probably have to be a Calvinist, okay? The one thing you can't get from reading the Gospels and especially the letters is you can't draw the standard evangelical doctrine of free will, the free will, you must choose Jesus. And if you don't choose Jesus, you go to hell. You cannot come up with that conclusion from reading the New Testament. If anything, you would have to pretty much be a Calvinist.
Well, that was my conclusion too, Tom. So we do think along the same lines. That it is amazing that the very most basic creeds of Christianity, just like you said, the doctrine of free will. And I remember when my mind first started entertaining the thought about free will and the standard statement, you know, that's like, okay, we already know this. And again, here we go again with those, you can pretty well say that you know you've bit into something that just isn't quite factual or truthful. When you have to dismiss everything as we already know this and we already know this. So now, since we already know everything, which they always said about, well, we already know that man has free will. since we know that, boom, now we've got all the rest of this that we've got to figure out. Well, I remember the first time I questioned that too, Tom, and of course the rationale for it wasn't the Bible verse. The rationale for it was that God would never violate a man's will. And I just, all of a sudden, I just started having flashbacks of the Bible. And how many times throughout the Old Testament and the New that God violated people's will.
Oh, yeah. He just makes them do stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, look at Pharaoh. Pharaoh didn't have a chance.
No. And then they believed that it was prophesied about Judas and that he would betray Jesus. And then they say that God will never violate someone's will?
Right.
Oh, my gosh. And
if he doesn't betray Jesus, then the prophecy was false.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a total violation of anybody's will, because especially with evangelical Christianity, they say Judas went to hell because
right.
of his betrayal and because he never accepted Jesus. He never, you know, prayed the sinner's prayer. He killed himself. That's their biggest reason they believe he went to hell. It's not even that he betrayed Jesus. They believe he went to hell because he committed suicide. And if that's not a violation of someone's will, I don't know what is. When you pre-prescribe what someone is and is not going to do to bring about your will, I think it's total manipulation and control, but of man's will. But here's the thing, is that God did control the will of man so he could truly set us free, so that our will,
right.
and he redeemed us against our will,
mm-hmm.
so that we could be truly free, that our will would be what would be the driving force. But it should be a will that is confident of the love of God, and not a will that is trying to despite the will of God or fight against God or try to embrace God or try to live for God. And all of that mentality, like you said, as clearly as anybody could say, it'll drive you crazy.
It will literally drive
you crazy.
Every time you're praying for somebody, you're asking God to go. Let's say you've got a kid that's taking drugs.
Yeah.
Your prayers are asking God to go against that person's will.
Yeah, you are. Yes.
And if you're going to go so far as ask God to go against his will to get him to stop using drugs, then why don't you ask him to go all the way and just totally override him?
Absolutely.
Just go ahead
and make him confess Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. Well, then it'd be a robot.
Well, see, I like your thinking. You know, the reason I like your thinking is because that is the way the scriptures are supposed to train us to think. We're supposed to think to the most fatal conclusion of any religious thought. And when we think through to the most fatal conclusion, we find the cross. The cross is the fatal conclusion of all religion. It is the fatal. It is the final fatal thought, the final fatality, if you will, even, of the insanity of religion, but specifically designed to corral our thinking to where that we didn't stay corralled. We're set free. Think anything you want now.
Amen.
You know, believe in global warming, don't believe in global warming. Become a Catholic, become a Baptist, become a Hindu, whatever you choose. The issue now is that you're free. But if you want to know how you're free, I know somebody that can tell you that. And Tom Tomsky's one of them. So.
Anyway, Jim's one of my buddies.
Knappenberger.
Yeah,
we go
to breakfast. Yeah, we're
all
right. Friends.
He just sent another email.
Another
Tim,
one.
He says, thanks for answering, Mike. Please know you are no longer, quote-unquote, the only one. Our little band is out here, if not in the flesh, in the spirit.
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
Well, you guys need to get together and have Michael Dollar to Ohio.
Well, you know what? We talk about it all the time because
the three of us,
Tim is the most adamantly anti-church because he was the deeper. The two other guys were real deep into church. Okay, like I'm the rebel. Okay.
Yeah.
I never was a good Christian. I never was any good at it. You know what I mean? I just was terrible at it.
Yeah.
You know, but they were pretty good at it, especially Tim. He was real good at it.
Yeah.
But hang on, my wife's tapping on the window.
Who's the boss of the Tonsky family?
Nah. Yeah, that's for sure. I like it that way. That way I don't have to make no decisions.
I hear you.
I'm free. I'm free to just do what she chooses. We talk about that a lot, and I know what you're saying. I got friends in town that are pastors, and I write them emails, and I talk to them.
Jeez.
And they think I'm crazy, but you know what? They don't come to try to save me.
No, no. They won't do that anymore.
No. If you think I'm such a heretic and I'm on my way to hell and I'm so far off the track, then why don't you come and meet me or come to my house and try to save me from going to hell?
Yeah, you would think they would care enough.
Where's your compassion?
You know, nobody cares.
Well, listen, Tom, you guys need to be in touch with Michael because, as we were talking with Helen earlier, any small group can have Michael come and share. And we really appreciate those times because that's where the fresh new teachings come from when Michael has venues to go and to speak to people. So you need to be in touch with us and consider having him come to Ohio.
Oh, I know. And like I said, I'd love to do it, and I don't know what's going on. I just hate to think of, you know, three people sitting, there'd be five, let's see. Rick's wife's one of us, my wife's one of us. So we'd have five or six that I know.
That'd be fine.
I could probably wrangle up a few that would just come for the heck of it.
Just for the entertainment.
I'd be better off. I'd be able to get a whole lot of people I know that would come that don't go to church.
Well, you should do that because you got to realize that the first series that was ever done proclaiming the redemption of the entire world, a series that ended up being three meetings that was recorded and that has literally gone all over the world. We know it's been recorded in many different languages, including Mandarin Chinese. It was recorded in my living room with about six people.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So,
okay.
So these kind of meetings could be very, very impacting, and we talk about it quite frequently. But now with Helen talking about all the folks at Edmonton, you've got folks in Ohio there, or whoever's listening right now, all you got to do is give Michael a phone call. And we gave his home number earlier. We're going to give it right now. It's 281-955-1910. 281-955-1910. And that's Mike's home number. You can call him and arrange these meetings. And Michael will come into your living room. You don't have to get a hotel. You don't have to get a meeting place. He'll do it right in the living room. We'll bring the recording equipment. And great series have come from those kind of meetings. Helen was talking earlier about the last meeting that was done at Edmonton was done in a home that Mike taught on the Book of Galatians. And you don't have to have a convention. It's a lot less expensive than you think it is. And
I understand. I got a large basement. I could probably comfortably put, I ain't kidding you, 30, 40 people in my basement.
That'd be fantastic.
But, you know, 30, 40 people, that would be like a big crowd.
Right. We would take half of that. It would be wonderful.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll be working on it because I know what you're saying. You know, I was in California a couple years ago, And as you guys know, I've been into this for quite a while, long
right.
time, 20 years. And one of the first people I ever remembered really reading about was a fellow named John Gavazzoni. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
I have.
But he's a really good writer, good teacher. So I was out in California visiting my brother, and he lives in Thousand Oaks. So I called him, and I, you know, talked to him, and he met me for breakfast. We went down to Denny's and spent about an hour with breakfast. Delightful man, you know. And that was our Sunday, you know. That's what he does, too. It's what we all do, I guess, you know. And I
yeah.
asked him, I said, are there any people you fellowship with? And he says, well, there's a few people live a couple hundred miles away, a couple hours away, and we'll get together every couple months or something like that. And I just thought, wow, it's just, I guess it just must be the way it's supposed to be right now, you know?
Well, it is the way it is, that's for sure.
Yeah,
yeah.
That, you got that right. It is.
And
what
we've
it
got
is.
A virtual meeting every Wednesday night here on the Internet with people that we know listening around the world. And there's a lot more of us out there than you think. But regardless of how many are in your community, Michael will come to your area. And
okay.
And
well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to get in. I'm going to keep in touch with you guys, because what I'd like to do is have a bit of a if I could get like an idea how flexible your schedule is. You know,
very flexible.
Okay, because I get a weekend off every 6 weeks.
Oh, you want me to come
I
up
imagine,
every 6 weeks?
Well, I don't know. We'll have to see, because I know it ain't that bad to fly up from Houston. It's only like 200 and some bucks.
Every 6 weeks? Man, we'd establish some good teaching series out of that. I need to do the book of Ephesians, Philippians, and Colossians.
Okay. Okay, I'll tell you what. We'll see what happens. Whatever
right,
happens,
Tom.
Happens. But I'm pretty whacked out. I'd try anything, you know. So I ain't scared of nothing, put it that way.
That's awesome,
you
brother.
Know, if it's me, you, and my wife, and Tim and Rick, and his wife sitting around drinking coffee and whatever, you know, that would be good, too.
It absolutely
need.
Would be.
Okay. Well, I'm going to let
right,
you
Tom,
guys
thank
go.
Thank you.
Nice talking
Thanks, Tom.
To you.
All right.
Yeah, thank you.
Pleasure.
All right. We'll see you guys.
All right. All right, there's Tom Tonsky from Ohio. People don't realize, Michael, how easy it is to have you come and share with even the smallest group in their home.
You know, if everybody had me in who wanted to have me in, I would be busy all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have to schedule time off like I did back in Word of Faith days. But I probably wouldn't. Gosh, this is so much fun, and meeting these folks and sharing the gospel is just so amazing. But yeah, there's isn't that the most consistent thing though that we hear all the time? Is well, there's just a small group of us here, and yeah, we've thought about having Mike in, but that doesn't work any further than that. And let me say this. You guys know how I believe, anyway, about freedom. I don't believe that God is going to do something to try to work this out. Whether these guys have me into Ohio, whether I go up to Edmonton or not, this is the power of freedom. You can make this happen. Not wait to see what happens. If you want it to happen, now if you don't want it to happen, don't do it. But if you want it to happen, make it happen. That's part of the power of the freedom that we have. You're not sitting around waiting for the wind to blow right direction. I mean, what if a poor mailman would do that? We'd never get our mail. But you got to be like a mailman, and you got to decide what you're going to do regardless of the circumstances instead of waiting for something to move the right direction. Not that Tom is doing that at all. But many people are still really bound in that mindset and still would spiritualize something like, such as, just simply having me in or not, you know, waiting to see what might turn up. Well, if you wait to see what might turn up, I ain't coming.
Right.
But if you decide that's what you want to happen, then make it happen. And you know what? It will happen. And
well,
you know what?
Happen. You just asked the folks recently.
We will have a great time.
Yeah, in Indiana and San Antonio and Calgary. And, I mean, Michael will come.
Absolutely.
Speaking of somebody that's making it happen, I just really felt that we needed to acknowledge David Johnson. David is a regular contributor to the Gospel Revolution and Michael Williams Ministries. And as you beautiful humans have heard us talk before, by the way, this will take a few minutes, so if you want to call in, there's still a few more minutes, feel free. 1-800-436-3260. Sean is still waiting to take your call. 1-800-436-3260. You can see how important the calls are and the participation is to this effort and how interesting and wonderful it is to hear from people from all over the place. 1-800-436-3260. We're still live and online if you're listening, and it's a little after a quarter hour, 20 minutes actually, after 10 o'clock on the East Coast of the United States. Give us a call, 1-800-436-3260. But I did want to recognize David Johnson. Michael, these are the gifts that David has given. I don't have a calculator handy, but we'll estimate. How about that? These are the gifts that David has sent our way on PayPal, just going to the website and just giving small gifts since the convention in Houston in November. This was on November 12th. David gave $8.60. On November 15th, David gave $6.10. On November 24th, he gave $28.50. On November 25th, he gave $2. On November 30th, he gave $4. On December 1st, he gave $6.90. On December 3rd, he gave $2. On December 8th, he gave $20.10. That's just been in less than a month. Now, all told, that's got to be close to $100.
Again, I didn't have 75.
How much?
I think it's about 75.
About $75.
Yep.
Just in this month, by giving small amounts. Apparently, we've got to get David on the program eventually. We don't even know. I mean, his brother Scott was at the convention in Houston with his girlfriend Megan, and we're not even sure if David knows that we talk about him. All we know is that on a frequent basis, he's thinking about this effort and contributing financially, even small amounts like $1 and $2. And so we're not even sure if he knows that we're talking about him, how much we appreciate him. But it just shows you, Michael, let's say it's $75. Again, I don't have a calculator in front of me. I just read it in front of you beautiful humans live and impromptu, if you will. How much a difference one person giving small amounts, even several small amounts, can make.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just it really is. It's unbelievable, you know. And and David, by his own admission, is certainly you know, kind of runs the ragged edge, you know, when it comes to finances. And this is just what he is, you know, purposing in his heart to do. I don't know what means he's doing. I don't know if he's giving a certain percentage of his income. And somebody might say, "Oh, that's a tithe." No. Giving a certain percentage of your income now is just simply a means of keeping track of what you commit
to do. Right, it's just a means of discipline.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the tithe. In fact, to make sure you're not tithing, maybe you want to give 11%. So.
Or 50%.
There you go. Just, you know, we'll keep you free from the tithe. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with, in fact, I think that it is the appropriate thing to do, to decide, you know, what percentage of your earnings that you want to go into the spreading of the gospel. And, but now what the system that he has, whatever it is, I don't know if he's giving a percentage of everything that, that he has that comes his way or exactly what he's doing, but he has some method that he has worked out that keeps him the most regular,
most active,
most frequent giver.
Yeah.
The, not the most regular, but the most frequent giver to the gospel revolution, for sure. We have nobody that gives that frequently. No one that comes anywhere near the frequency. And there's others that, you know, they've purposed, you know, what they're going to do every month. And they do that. And I guess the issue that would, you know, that I would like to encourage people in, because I know if you're listening, it's because you love the gospel. I mean, we very rarely have people listen because they hate us. They can't handle it. The people that would hate the gospel that I teach would not have what it takes to be able to listen to it at all. So if you're listening, you've got a heart for the gospel. And if you have a heart for the gospel, most of you know there's not a whole lot of places that you could send funds to you know what the doctrine is. Now, Glenn, I had no thought of bringing this up, but I am going to bring it up tonight. And that is the current situation that, you know, and it really does come down to the current situation that I am in. It is, you know, it's the entire organization, but it doesn't fall on anybody's shoulders but mine when it comes to these finances and the things that the ministry has to pay for. There's no one that has answer for it but me. There's the only one that can get the bills paid is me. It's when the funds are in the account. But we are we still have to clear up our final debt for the convention, and by the time the weekend is over, actually be just about the time of the next broadcast, I have to raise $5,500. Now, that's with me taking no salary. I have stopped taking a salary at this point because we're trying to get this debt paid. And we really thought we would raise the funds to cover the convention. But the economy just hit everybody so strong.
Right. Now, well, between the last pledge drive that happened a few weeks before the convention and the actual convention itself, you know, our hope was that we would meet the expenses
absolutely.
Of the convention.
And it just didn't happen, you know. It just did not happen. And I think when this year is over, we're not going to have a situation like that again, hopefully. But that's where I'm at right now. Now, here's the thing. I either am able to raise these funds by calling people to order the CD series, and asking people if they want to contribute toward that means or whatever, or I have to borrow $5,500, and if I borrow it, I will have to pay it out of my own funds, which will be in the form of my tax return after January. There's already a large portion of that that's already committed. But this is falling squarely on me, not on somebody else, not on anyone else. It's falling squarely on me, and I don't feel, and that's the thing that I want you to know, is that I'm not losing sleep. I'm not anxious about it, and it's not because I know the Lord's going to do it, and I don't even have those thoughts anymore. But I know something will work out. You know, it's something will work out. I never want anyone to feel pressured because of the situation. Because even when it is a difficult situation like this, for the most part, I don't take that pressure upon myself. I always know that something will work. I will work something out. You know, even if it comes down to me having to get a loan on my car. I've got a car, thank God, that's paid for. And I know some of these little places, little lending places, will take your title
for
your car.
Well, Mike, you're not supposed to say stuff like that when you're making a financial appeal.
No, I want people to know this is where it's at. Nobody has to do anything. I will be able to do this one way or the other. And that's where this is. And here we are, you know, at the hour and a half, which we normally would have just been completely off the air for 30 minutes by now. But here we've taken extra phone calls and stayed on. But we stayed on too long. I remembered that I have $5,500 that I have to pay off. And
this is real 15th. Advancement, ladies and gentlemen. This is progress, because Michael could teach for an hour and a half many times from the pulpit and forget to even take an offering.
Oh, so many times.
So the fact that we've gone an extra 30 minutes over, and then it has come to him that he's $5,500 short of the expenses of the convention, this is progress, Mikey. This is how I'm looking at it.
Well, I suppose you could say it. It was totally an afterthought. And, you know, had we not gotten into the discussion we were in, it would have never come to my mind at all.
Right. Well, see, David Johnson's graciousness and his generosity produced that reminder.
Yeah, it really did.
So if you can do anything, folks, just go to gospelrevolution.com. If you want to do anything, in an end-of-the-year type gift, it would be much appreciated, especially going into this last week here before
that bill has
to be paid.
Glenn, they can also call me personally, and we can put it just the same as people call me and they can make that contribution to the ministry, and we can they can use their credit card or anything. If this is an emergency, it is for sure. And I am going to go ahead and prepare for the possibility. I know that I'm not supposed to do that from my teaching in the Word of Faith movement, but I will go ahead and prepare for the possibility that I'll have to take a loan out on the car to be able to meet this debt. It is not a debt that can be delayed. It must be paid by the 15th for sure.
All right. Well, there you have it, beautiful humans. Ending on a note of request, and we will do this one more time next week, at least. And Mikey, thank you as always. We also want to thank Carrie McDaniel, for participating via email, as well as Tim Knappenberger, Helen Gannett for calling from Alberta, and Tom Tonsky from calling from Ohio. I want to thank Sean O'Halloran for doing a great job producing and engineering and call screening this webcast. Until 1 week's time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!